At a downtown gallery in New York on a recent Thursday night, I stood in a crowd transfixed by still pictures of Miles Davis, taken by various photographers. Davis was maybe as interesting to look at as he was to hear. He's always a draw. But old jazz photos in general are magnetic, partly because they take you back, says one member of the crowd.
The moodiness, the intensity. I have a nostalgia for something I missed. But this was like the heyday, you know.
What people think of as the heyday of jazz was just as alluring for the photographers who documented it. After all, they'd started as jazz fans themselves.
I was a teenager. We had no television or anything like that. We had the radio, but jazz on the radio was not very available at the time because there was no audience for it.
Photographer Herman Leonard grew up in a household filled with the music of Bach and Beethoven.
You know, they were nice, but they didn't excite me until one day I turned on the radio and they had a local radio station with a disc jockey. He put on a record by Louis Jordan. I remember some of the lyrics, and there was something like, how high am I? I won't get sober till the 4th of July.
Move all the buildings and let me by.
You know, the rhythm of the thing made my feet tap.
Hey, Richard, come on down to your bar and open this door.
That's how I got into this thing.
Leonard studied photography in college, served in World War II, and then landed in New York in 1948.
In those days, there were no jazz photographers. There was no market for it. I got paid $10 by Downbeat magazine. You can't make a living out of that.
It was common then for photo subjects to go to photographer studios. But photographer Herman Leonard went to the subjects. He took his camera to the clubs instead.
Then I was working with the 4x5 speed graphic. It was the newspaper camera. The kind you see in old movies with these phalanxes of photographers and their flash bulbs going off. It's a big camera. And I could only carry maybe 10 or 15 holders. Each would have two sheets of film in them. So I was limited to 20 or 30 shots the whole night.
And lighting the dark clubs was a challenge.
My whole purpose of shooting them in the beginning was to make a visual record of what I was experiencing. So I put my lights in the same places where the lights were in the club. There was always a spotlight on the microphone, so I put my light right next to their light. I wanted to preserve the atmosphere of the club. I didn't want to change anything.
One of Leonard's signature images is his picture of Duke Ellington on stage at the piano, silhouetted by dramatically white beams of light. He remembers the moment of having taken the picture so well.
I clicked the camera. Of course, the audience couldn't hear it because I was pretty far back. But he heard it, and he looked over and gave me a wink. That was my reward. More than the photo, that was my reward.
Leonard's photos put jazz players on a kind of pedestal. There's striking light and atmospheric curling smoke in so many of the pictures.
They all smoked. And if you use the lighting the way I used it, it accentuated the smoke. The backlight is what brought out the smoke. But with the smoke, there's animation. There's drama. Now, I didn't design that. It just happened.
A jazz photograph, like jazz itself, is to some degree about what just happens. It can't really be planned beyond a certain point. For Roy DeCarava, photographing jazz players starting in the late 40s, it was more a question of removing the pedestal, bringing the exalted musicians down to earth.
I felt that they were being ignored as people and were just entertainers, and when they put their horn down, they lost their identity. So I also wanted to show them as human beings, just people. Every gesture has meaning. Just the way they sit and the way they move, the language that their bodies give off. It's fantastic.
DeCarava's shot of Dizzy Gillespie dancing, for example. Or the one of Thelonious Monk, just standing, holding his hat in his two hands.
Funny thing about Monk's music, I always identified it with children's rhymes. It was almost like some of the things I used to hear as a kid. And that's what attracted me to him.
Mr. Carava had his own jazz awakening in Harlem in his teen years.
On 25th Street, they had four theaters, and every musician in the world came through those four doors. In fact, I was in high school, and every Friday, the shows changed. You know, a new show would come in, and every Friday, nobody was in school. So it was just a glorious time.
With photography, he could come that much closer to jazz. After all, a photographer can't make two photographs exactly alike any more than a jazz player can play a tune exactly the same way twice.
That's the interesting thing. It also works for me in photographs. It's very difficult to reproduce something that you did before.
Photography, says De Carava, is an intractable process.
You know why? Because it's such a success. It's so descriptive. I mean, how can you compete with a process that can show you infinite detail that you can't even see? How do you take that process, which is, how do you photograph feeling? I still don't know that I know the answer, but that's what I strive for. That's what I want.
The camera can only photograph what's in front of the lens. And I think a large part of whatever success I had was due to improvisation. You know, like going to a club, you never know where the guy's going to stand or he's going to look or what angle he's going to take. You know, sometimes improvisation yields nothing, but sometimes it yields things that you could never have imagined. And that's the joy of it.
Improvisers shooting photos of people improvising. It makes those frozen moments in jazz so good to look at. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishko.